Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Must Love Silence by Lucy Bexley, narrated by Abby Craden. Chapter 1. Rhys snapped on her headphones like a pilot readying for takeoff. The soft thud of the foam against her ears took the fake opera assaulting her from an 11 down to a manageable 6. Her next-door neighbor, Judith, could invade her apartment without even stepping inside. It was auditory warfare. Her vocal exercises filled the room as she prepared for her day of recording. What would it cost to soundproof her entire apartment, rather than just her studio? The sooner she finished these chapters, the sooner she'd get paid. And the sooner she got paid, the sooner she could order that glass and wood coffee maker that looked like something out of an 18th-century apothecary lab that she'd had her eye on. She wasn't sure how long the knocking had been going on for before she noticed it. At first, she caught a tremor in the door, a blurry vibration like a heat wave emanating from the highway. Rhys thought about ignoring it. No one ever came here, and she never left. It was probably one of Judith's many loud visitors, here for another night of cards. She held her headphones away from her ears for a moment, still intending to just wait them out until Judith intercepted them.
Rhys Walker, I know you're in there. I heard you talking.
The gruff voice was like sandpaper on her ears. She resisted the urge to pull her headphones back up and block out this unpleasantness. Shit! How did a stranger know her name? Had he really heard her reciting Ice, Ice, Baby like a Shakespearean sonnet? Some people might consider that an honor, but it's a privilege that's earned. Rhys tiptoed to the door, holding her breath. Her lungs burned as she looked at the viewfinder into the hall. The rather sweaty, magenta-colored face of a man who looked like he meant business greeted her. His slate-blue post office issue jacket was a size too small and strained at the shoulders in protest. Above his mouth, a gray mustache sat like a push broom, obscuring his expression. Such a fine line between a smile and a snarl. From the aggression of his knocking, she assumed it was grim. Rhys might not like people, but she respected delivery guys. Delivery people. No need to gender it. Mostly she liked the ladies. She often left cookies out for them because she viewed them as modern-day Santas bringing her useless toys, and also the kind of clutch packages you only appreciate as an adult, like wool socks and gift cards. But this Santa seemed as far from jolly as the South Pole is from the North. She saw him raise his fist and flinched back from the door just before he made contact, assaulting her ears with a machine gun rhythm. There was no law that said she had to answer the door for the post office. It's not like he could break it down to make her sign for a package, right? Companies have been getting a lot more rights ever since they became people.
Ms. Walker, I need you to open the door and sign for this. I can't leave until you do, or I'll be forced to come back every single day.
Rhys held her breath. Would tomorrow be better for her? Right now it seemed a hell of a lot better than today.
I can see your feet under the door.
Rhys took another step back. She wanted him to be bluffing. She heard a door creak open and knew from the high-pitched squeal of the hinges that Cyclone Judith was about to get involved. Fuck. The very last thing she needed was Judith any more involved in her life. Rhys took a deep breath and set about unbolting the three locks and a single chain securing her door. She threw the door to the hall open and leaned against the frame, running a hand through her hair, leaving it a bit tousled. Sorry about that, she said, pointing to the headphones hanging around her neck like earmuffs. I didn't hear you at first.
That must be some music you're listening to. Look, I need you to sign for this, then I can be on my way.
It's white noise. Rhys glanced around the door and saw Judith tipping into the hall. Judith caught her eye and waved, the audacity. What am I signing for?
It's a certified letter. The sender paid for proof of delivery.
What a waste. Who even opens mail? And how do I know it's not bad news?
In my experience, these letters are rarely good news, but you're still required to accept it.
Fine. Do you have a pen? Rhys held out her hand as he pinched a ballpoint from his jacket pocket. Rhys kept her feet in her apartment and leaned into the hallway like the threshold was lava as she scribbled her name on the slip. She never stepped into the hall if she could help it. Not since the great Judith incident of January 2019, when she'd screamed fire at 3 a.m., Rhys had shot out of her apartment braless and breathless, clutching her delicate aloe plant as she fled down to the street below. Judith was there waiting in the ugliest and pinkest robe she'd ever seen. She found out later that the fire was just a burnt smell coming from Judith's oven after she'd forgotten about some oatmeal raisin cookies. The raisins were strike one, a clear violation. Never again would she evacuate before she could both smell and taste the smoke. Hell was other people, notably Judith. The postman handed over the letter, and her stomach dropped when she saw the return address. Serenity, Sobriety, and Recovery in Detroit. Reese thanked the man and closed the door. But before the latch caught, another knock came. Had she not signed everywhere she needed to? The door creaked back open, protesting when Judith surged forward like a Black Friday shopper desperate for a stand mixer.
Reese, glad to see you're still alive, my dear.
I was beginning to wonder.
Hi, Judith, Reese said as she straightened up, slipping the letter into her back pocket.
What was that all about? You don't usually have visitors.
You know as much as I do. You were watching from 2 feet away, Reese said. She immediately felt annoyed with herself for the bite in her voice. She felt eager to open the bill, but under no circumstances would she open up that part of her life to Judith. She'd probably ask a lot of questions, or worse, try to help. Anyway, how have you been? Reese raised her voice at the end, mimicking a cheerful person asking a question, as though they were interested in the answer.
I'm good. Canasta Club tonight. Any interest in joining? I could ask Sally to bring her daughter. I heard from Anna Lynn that she dated a woman after her divorce.
Judith shoved her hands into the pockets of her white silk pajama pants. Her peony pink silk robe was pinched around her waist, and it matched perfectly the pink foam rollers spiking out of her hair, like a handful of Easter eggs poorly hidden in dead grass. I'm good, thanks. Lots of work to do.
You work too much. I hear you practicing those sexy readings on your fire escape sometimes. Do you really get paid to make those noises?
Reese truly wished the hallway was lava so she could swan dive into it and escape this conversation forever. I get paid, but not very well. Reese's smile was a grimace and drag.
Well, you love it. That's what matters. And you sound like you could make a lucky lady very happy one day. But I'm not sure how you plan to fall in love if you never leave this apartment of yours. I'm just trying to bring the options to you, dear.
I don't want to fall in love, Judith. People are terrible. Reese could feel the letter burning in her back pocket. Jumping into that lava would probably solve several of her most pressing problems right now. The unpleasant singe would be nothing compared to this actual never-ending torture of discussing her queer love life with her 70-year-old neighbor. A neighbor who had not just overheard her practicing sex scenes for audiobooks, but had actually listened enough to have opinions about her performance. She either wanted to end this conversation quickly or die trying.
Not everyone is terrible.
Name one person that isn't.
Well, me,
Judith said with a chuckle as Reese fought to keep her face blank.
And I don't for 1 second believe you're terrible either. People are good at heart, and a lot of us want the best for you. We'd help if you'd let us.
Thanks, Judith. Let's agree to disagree on that one. I've met people. They aren't good.
Well, not all people are good, maybe, but most. You're shutting the good ones out with the bad, like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Save the baby, Reese.
Judith's laugh was the wheeze of bellows fanning the flames of Reese's smoldering rage.
You should give Sally's daughter a chance. She's probably not terrible. I mean, Sally gossips a little too much for my taste, and I hear her daughter can be a bit of a handful, and the way she goes through women, my God. Anyway, just think about it. You could use a little excitement. You don't have to be soulmates.
Okay, that's good to know. Look, I really have to get to work now. Those scenes won't record themselves. Have a good day, Judith. Reese took a step backward into her apartment. She watched with alarm as Judith took a half step forward, as though she might try to breach the threshold. Something she didn't even like her sister doing.
Just let me know about li-
Reese grimaced as she shut the door on Judith's frantically hopeful face.
Okay, Judith, I'll let you know,
she said, raising her voice to carry through the barrier. She'd never been more grateful for an ancient slab of oak. Did she feel bad about closing the door on Judith? Absolutely. Did she have to be rude to save herself? Also, yes. She'd learned a long time ago that if she didn't shut the door and lock it, Judith would walk right in, kick off her house shoes, and start prepping a hot dish. Bolting the door, Reese slumped against it as her heart rate prepared for a landing. Less than 3 minutes with Judith, and she craved a nap. Reese pulled the envelope from her back pocket, cradling it on her palms. She set it down on the table and filleted it open with her paring knife. She shook the envelope and let the guts of the letter spill out onto the table. She pinched the edges gingerly. Her eyes skipped down the page, reading only what was bolded. Even bills had filler these days. A final overdue notice, strange, because she hadn't seen any other notices, which might have something to do with the stack of unopened mail she kept by the door. She quite liked the look of it. It reminded her of baklava. Serious mail should come in red envelopes, although unless it also exploded, probably would take its place in the stack all the same. Her eyes came to rest on the bottom of the page, overdue in the amount of $22,000, which was $2,000 more than the original cost of treatment. Fees and interest should be illegal. At the bottom of the page in angry red letters was a threat, payment due upon receipt. But no later than 14 days from delivery of the letter, otherwise the account would go to collections. Shit. She knew she shouldn't have signed that slip. Nothing good ever came from answering her door. Not one good thing. Now she was on the hook for $22,000 that she absolutely, 100%, didn't have. Her dream of a beautiful coffee contraption that was going to solve all of her problems and make her happy forever shattered into a million glittering pieces. But what was the worst they could do, really? Would the rehab center really send a collections agency after her? Or would they simply send another letter with even larger, even redder font? Reese continued reading. Furthermore, failure to pay by the due date would result in termination of treatment. Well, that was pretty bad as absolute catastrophes went. A very dramatic image of her sister Lauren being put out onto the street like some kind of Dickensian urchin flashed through her mind. Never mind that Lo was 34 and not as helpless as the drinking sometimes made her seem. She had a law degree, not that she was allowed to use it anymore. How had she messed this up so badly? She knew Lo had put her payment information down when she checked into rehab this time. She had blindly agreed to cover the costs. She would have agreed to anything to get Lo out of her bad relationship and sober again. She'd been so busy avoiding the mail and everything else that she'd nearly cost her sister her recovery. Selfish and reckless. How was she going to come up with that kind of money, or anything close to it, in 2 weeks? She could sell a kidney, but that would probably require leaving her apartment, which made it a less attractive option. She had the money coming in from her most recent job, assuming she could finish recording today, plus she could drain her savings, but that still left her short and with no money for incidentals, like her own food or rent. Reese picked up her phone and dialed the only number she could think of, her only in-case-of-emergency.
Hello, this is David Remmer.
Well, hello, Mr. Professional Robot.
Reese, I was wondering when you were going to call me back.
Oh, right. You called. Reese tried to keep the confusion out of her voice.
And you didn't notice. I'll pretend like that isn't a sledgehammer to my ego.
Wow, a little dramatic.
I learned from the best. Queen Reese, first of her name, hater of all her subjects.
You know it's not personal. All calls except Lowe's go straight to voicemail, and I check those when I can.
Which is never.
Which is never, correct. So what were you calling about?
I just wanted to check on you and on Lowe. She doing okay? Adam says she's making good progress.
Funny you should bring that up. I just opened a pretty hefty bill from the rehab. I may have inadvertently missed the first few.
Reese, I love you, but you know I had to call in a favor with them to get Lowe in on such short notice.
I know, and I'm going to pay for it. Actually, speaking of desperately needing money, I was wondering if you had any jobs I could do. I'll take anything. Nonfiction, even heteromance.
I'm surprised you were able to say that without throwing up.
Hey, I know heterosexual people have sex. It's just not something I like to think about.
I miss the way you say heterosexual, like it's two separate words and you don't like either of them.
Reese laughed. I guess I do. Look, I recorded my share of straight romances when I first started out. They just require a lot more acting, much like my straight relationships in high school did.
Well, you definitely had to act a lot with Justin. That guy was as interesting as a tapeworm.
Kissed like one, too. Please don't ever tell me things like that. I just threw up a little. Okay, focus. I'm kind of freaking out about this money thing.
Oh, right, sorry. Okay, so there is this one job, but I don't think you'll want it.
I already told you I'll record a straight romance.
It's not that. It's a lesbian romance. It's just,
that's perfect. I'll do it.
Well, I can definitely get you an audition.
Can you just send my samples or send me the scenes and I'll record them today?
Oh, sweet, naive, introverted Reese. Are you familiar with Arden Abbott?
Of course, she's big time. She's written, what, 15 books, all of them bestsellers?
Let me rephrase. Are you familiar with Arden Abbott's reputation as a person?
Hopefully I'm about to be.
Okay, just remember you said that.
So her audiobook narrator just dropped out. She says she's in the hospital with laryngitis. Who knows, maybe she is. She's looking for a replacement to start in the next few days. But first, you'd need to audition.
Well, that's pretty standard. Can you send me the scenes today?
Ms. Abbott likes a cold audition.
What does that mean? Like over a video call?
Or she wants me to be physically cold. I guess I could record on my fire escape.
You're hilarious, David said dryly.
So glad your hibernation hasn't taken that away from you. Cold like cold open, in person, in New York. She's a bit exacting. But hey, I guess you don't reach her level of success without a few control issues.
She was incapable of forming a professional response to that.
Listen, before you say no, don't say no.
I'm sorry. Are you telling me I need to fly to New York to talk to myself in a room all day when I have a perfectly good converted linen closet in my apartment?
Well, you wouldn't be by yourself, actually. I'm doing production for one.
And for two?
And she likes to oversee the entire process.
Meaning?
She's there for the recording sessions. In the studio. Sometimes she gives notes.
I don't think I can do that, David. She'd what? Make eye contact with me while I read sex scenes she wrote and then critique my breathy moans? Judith already has that covered.
How is Judith, by the way?
Not now. I don't think I'd make enough to even cover my travel expenses. And I doubt I get hazard pay to compensate for that trauma.
Her body shuddered with the violence of a phone on a coffee table. Did I mention that everyone loved the files you sent last week? The entire team is really pleased with your work on Away With Me. I heard a married straight woman dreamily call your voice smoky.
I'm glad to hear the pot is finally paying off, Reese said, dropping her voice an octave into a husky laugh.
Speaking of paying off, I think I could negotiate your pay to double your usual rate if Ms. Abbott likes your audition.
The wheels started to turn. She was already getting nearly double her regular rate for Away With Me, her first audiobook for a major publisher. And double that would get her very close to paying off Lowe's rehab in full. No bartering or IOUs needed, just good old American legal tender.
Where's the studio again?
Aha! I knew the money would draw you in. The studio is in Brooklyn. I know you'd have to leave your apartment, but just think about the bagels. And the pizza.
Detroit-style pizza for life, Davy! How could you?
Reese injected her voice with the same dramatic shock she used when a fictional cheating spouse was exposed.
That's not pizza. That's a casserole,
David said indignantly.
Please don't tell your father I said that.
Okay, you've got me. I'll think about it and get back to you.
I'd actually need a yes today, and you'd need to be on the first flight out tomorrow morning to audition. Ms. Abbott's been very clear that the timeline can't budge, and she's not willing to extend the studio booking. So you'd have a little under 2 weeks to record the novel start to finish.
Is this a thing? This calling her Ms. Abbott? Isn't she our age?
She's a few years older, early 30s, I think. I call her Ms. Abbott out of fear and respect.
Okay, fine. I'll go to New York. But I'm only doing it because I want to see you, and I really want one of those street corner pretzels.
And the money. Don't forget about that.
How could I ever forget about that?
Chapter 2 The plane Reese should have been on disappeared into the clear blue sky without her. A blender full of relief and anxiety churned in her stomach, one tumbling over the other until they became a terrible smoothie. To put it mildly, she was freaking the hell out. Most opportunities were a mistake. Everyone knew that. You regret 100% of the chances you take. When God closes a door, he opens a window for you to fall out of. No way she could survive a fall from a mile high. Much better to risk falling off her own reasonably high fire escape, where she had a chance of landing in the dumpster below. Reese had to get on the next tin can death trap to New York, and she also absolutely could not do that. The decision sat heavily on her shoulders, dragging her down. She shifted her back to her other arm. Going for this job was a horrible, no good, very bad, totally necessary idea, and Reese hated it. Who knew what the future held? She could spend the next 2 hours sitting next to a man who hogged the armrest and spat while he talked at her about deer season. And at the end of that odyssey, still not get this job. Sure, getting this paycheck would solve all her problems, but at what cost? The airport buzzed around the edges of her headphones and muffled everything in a pleasant underwater way. A sharp bump to her shoulder sent her stumbling forward, and a man in a Hawaiian shirt shuffled by, his flip-flops swooshing across the linoleum. She looked down at her own leather jacket and boots.
She was in another season entirely. She'd forgotten airports were always everything at once, each gate a mini Epcot diorama, except here the food was worse, probably. She felt something move against her ass, and she spun around ready to swat the offending intrusion. But there was no one behind her. Neither man nor mosquito. Just her phone buzzing again right where she'd left it in her back pocket. What a strange sensation. She couldn't remember the last time she'd worn pants with pockets, let alone felt her phone demand her attention like some grabby dude at a bar. She didn't recognize the number on the screen, and she let her finger hover over the dismiss button. Guilt at missing the flight she hadn't paid for to go to a meeting that could change her life compelled her to answer, and she hit accept before she could fully process the change in protocol. "Hello, this is Reese," she slipped into her reading voice.
"Reese, where are you? Are you on the fire escape? Your voice sounds deeper."
Unbelievable. She just wasted her professional voice on Judith. Judith's words were more rapid than normal, as if she'd just scaled the side of the building looking for Reese. Maybe she had. "Hi, Judith. Is the building on fire?" Why in the hell hadn't she saved Judith's number as one of her do-not-answers?
Rookie mistake. "What? No, I don't think so. I came by to tell you about Canasta and drop off some leftover cake, but you're not answering your door. I've been knocking and knocking. I almost called 911. Are you sick? Are you hurt?"
"I'm fine." Reese breathed out deeply, pushing her anxiety away from her like a car into a lake, a great heave that took everything she had. She watched all her problems sink below the surface of the conversation with a gurgling protest. Judith would latch onto the slightest tremor in her voice and stage a horrifying golf cart rescue through the airport in minutes. "I have to go out of town for work." Silence crackled on the line. Reese raised her phone, hoping the terrible airport reception had done her a solid and dropped the call. But the call timer was still ticking.
"Did I lose you, Judith?" "No, I thought I heard you say you're going out of town for work, and I had to sit down. I think I'm hallucinating. I knew there was something off with that spin dip last night. Don't worry, those aren't the leftovers I brought you."
"You're not hallucinating. I got a job interview, so I'll be gone for a few days to a few weeks, depending on whether they like me. And I can't take the leftovers. I'm not home."
"Well, if you're reading a kissing book, how could they not love you? You're a pro. I've listened to every book you've done. That nice librarian Susie showed me how to search you and then download audiobooks onto my phone. Do you know Susie? She's pretty quiet. Maybe you two could date."
"I'm looking for more in a relationship than someone not talking to me."
"Oh, like what?"
Judith's voice squeaked, and Reese could picture her with a pen poised over a bright pink notepad ready to make a list. "Thanks for checking on me, Judith. I really should get going, though. I'm about to board." Reese looked at the empty gate. The next flight to New York had just posted, and she needed to grovel for her shot at 3 hours of forced proximity and cocktail peanuts.
"Okay, I don't want to bother you, dear. Not with your important business flight. This is so exciting. Is there anything I can do for you while you're away?"
She couldn't remember the last time someone offered to help her with something. She had a flash of warmth in her chest. Usually she was helping Lo with some crisis. She heard Judith inhale deeply over the line, and the warmth dissipated. She knew that preparatory inhale. Shit.
"I could get your mail. Or did you have a chance to clean out your fridge before you left? Or maybe I could help with laundry. You know, I've got a sewing machine and I've been practicing my hemming. I could alter some of your clothes for you. I noticed you had cuffed the jeans you were wearing the other day. Are they too long? Taking them up an inch would fix that right up."
The cool sting of airport air conditioning stung her wide eyes. If hell was still working on the circle system, Judith touching her clothes was the fifth circle at least. She spun through a mental Rolodex of tasks that Judith could do, looking for the least invasive, anything to redirect the conversation. She knew if she didn't toss Judith a softball, she'd come back to a closet full of capris and her perfect blank walls covered in floral wallpaper, like a rose garden with motion sickness. Plants. She had totally forgotten about her succulents. It would give Judith access to her apartment, but it was a risk she'd have to take. She couldn't just leave her apartment for 2 weeks with no plan for those guys. What if this was the one time of year they needed water, and they died because she wasn't there to give it to them? Could she live with herself if she became a plant murderer? She had to ignore the tiny thought that flitted through her brain, reminding her that her plans did, in fact, die slow and brittle deaths regularly. It was the intent that mattered. She couldn't intentionally, knowingly, premeditatedly neglect her plants. It was a difference between murder and manslaughter, and she couldn't go down for that. Thanks, Judith. You could check in on my plants, I guess. They shouldn't need much water. Just once should cover it.
You've got it. I won't let you down. I'll clean up a bit while I'm there, too. That's on the house.
Judith laughed at her own joke. Rhys suppressed a groan.
Now go get on your flight and make your dreams come true.
Rhys clicked off the call. Judith was 100% going to hem her pants. Maybe 2 weeks away from Judith would be like a vacation, even if it had the potential to turn into a Jurassic Park situation. Everything's an adventure until the laws of society break down, and then it's a survival story. 5 hours later, she approached the dead silent conference room, just a table of business casual zombies scrolling through their phones. The icy breeze of the air conditioning stung her skin. It was cold enough that she wondered if one of the floor-to-ceiling windows lining the far wall was missing its glass. Her pulse pounded in her ears. It was like she was wearing her big headphones with no music on, heartbeat, white noise. Rhys watched her own traitor hand reach out and knock on the open door. It was a move straight out of an after-school special. What was wrong with her? At least she hadn't said, knock, knock. There would have been no coming back from that. Get it together, babe. 10 bodies swiveled in their seats in unison to look at her. She expected them to creak like a creepy animatronic band at a now-defunct pizza parlor, but someone must have oiled them recently. Hello, Ms. Walker. A sultry voice with an undertone greeted her, either harmless or lethal. She felt a thrill run down her spine. Hi, Rhys is fine. Well, she should just turn around and go back to Detroit now. No one was going to give a speaking job to someone saying, She might as well have walked in snapping her gum. The woman who had spoken sat at one end of the oval table. Her glasses were giving off a very hot retro librarian vibe. She was the kind of beautiful that rom-coms were always ruining with a makeover. The dark eyes behind the frames stared back at her like the lenses were the only thing keeping them from lasering her to ash. Rhys's mouth was so dry she had to suppress a cough. Had this woman actually lit her on fire, and now she had lungs full of smoke? Heat blazed on her face. A motion next to the stunning woman caught Rhys's eye, breaking her trance. David gave her a royal wave, then put up his hand. How badly would he embarrass her? He could definitely trust her to check the public humiliation box on her own. David discreetly pushed his mouth closed with his index finger as he nodded in her direction. Rhys snapped her mouth shut and gave him a grateful smile. Thank God that's all it was. No childhood nicknames to make this situation worse. Glad you could join us, Rhys.
Totally. The way she said Rhys's name sent a current through her that was somewhere between anxiety and arousal. It burned down her spine like a sparkler. Rhys was in trouble, and she kind of liked it.
If you're ready, we're all desperate to be freed from the suspense we've been in all day. Why don't you have a seat so we can get started?
The woman gestured to an open chair, her mouth a line as straight and unforgiving as the horizon. David's expression was carefully blank, but his eyes glimmered as he caught Rhys's gaze again. The small smile he sent her way gave her the will to walk to an empty seat instead of bolting. She'd already lost this job, that was a given, between the and arriving a full 2 hours late. Why not go for broke? She'd just be herself, leave it all out on the table. She dropped her bag next to her chair with a loud thud.
I take it you're Ms. Abbott? Thanks for waiting.
The woman nodded. Arden.
Rhys took her time settling into her chair, crossing her legs and pulling her tablet slowly from her bag. The confidence bluff took her full concentration, and her fingers gripped the glass screen so hard she thought it might shatter. If she was going to get detention, she wanted to really earn it. Arden's eyes were all over her. She felt them trail over her hands as she unlocked the screen, on her mouth as she quietly cleared her throat. Arden's gaze blazed along her collarbone as she reached up to adjust her necklace. It was already perfectly adjusted, so she just twirled the charm and let the warm petal fall against her skin. Her pale skin flushed beneath Arden's gaze,
and she knew anyone looking could follow the progress of her embarrassment like a match.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?